Hey, a president. Can you believe it, right?
Nope. Still can't. Still trying to figure it out.
Well, I don't know why I came here tonight.
Or survive it.
I got the feeling that something ain't right.
No, it ain't.
I'm so scared in case I fall off my chair. And I'm wondering how I'll get down the stairs. Clowns to the left of me, jokers to the right. Here I am, stuck in the middle with you.
Yep.
Yes, I'm stuck in the
From Pacifica
with you.
Radio in Los Angeles, this is the Bradcast, as heard on KPFK 90.7 FM in LA. Up in Oregon on 91.7 FM KYAQ on the Central Coast, 106.7 FM Queso in Cottage Grove. In Lancaster, Pennsylvania on 92.9 FM WLRI, on Maui, Hawaii on 88.5 FM KAKU, in Columbus, Ohio on 94.1 FM WGRN, in Palinville, New York on 102.9 FM WLPP, in Grand Rapids, Michigan on WPRR, and in Minneapolis, St. Paul on AM 950 KTNF. We're also heard streaming coast to coast and around the globe on the internets every day on the Progressive Voices channel, Netroots Radio, Indie Media Weekly, FYI Nation, NicoleSandler.com, Radio Free Brooklyn, GDPR Revolution 99, Detour Talk, Radio Monterey, and Radio Sputnik. Blanketing planet Earth, 5 days a week. I'm Brad Friedman, your friendly investigative blogger, journalist, troublemaker, muckraker. All around swell fellow says me from bradblog.com. Thank you for joining us today for another thrilling action-packed adventure. According to the latest report out today from the Electoral Integrity Project, an independent academic project based at Harvard University and the University of Sydney in Australia, which focuses on the integrity of elections by comparing elections held in 158 countries, from 2012 to 2016, elections in the U.S. were once again found to be, quote, worst among Western democracy. That thanks to stuff like the influence of money in politics, negative campaigning, lousy media coverage, voting systems that are vulnerable to manipulation, lack independent oversight, are different from state to state and county to county, and, of course, due to persistent claims of massive voter fraud, fake news, and alleged Russian interference, which the group's 2017 report out today says are all, quote, likely to further damage public confidence in the electoral process and faith in American democracy. Other than that, we're doing great. Along those lines, we've got some breaking news today concerning the special election primary in Georgia's 6th Congressional District for the U.S. House. That was the primary was held last month. The runoff is coming up in June. We've got a new report by a nonpartisan election integrity organization in Georgia, which found that the computer tabulating errors that halted the counting on election night last month for several hours. An analysis of what went wrong has now revealed a number of what this group describes as, quote, critical security flaws in the state's 100% unverifiable touchscreen voting and computer tabulation system. I will have the author of that report from Voter GA on very shortly. In the meantime, today, In the U.S. Senate, Sally Yates, a 27-year career official at the Department of Justice through 5 different presidential administrations, testified before a Senate subcommittee on Monday about her concerns that she shared with the White House, were given to the White House shortly after Donald Trump's inauguration, that Trump's former National Security Advisor Michael Flynn lied to the White House about his conversation with a Russian diplomat concerning sanctions against Russia that were implemented by the Obama administration in response to those allegations that Russia interfered with last year's presidential election. The White House took no public action after being warned by Yates for nearly 3 weeks in the Flynn matter. After being informed by her, she was at the time the acting attorney general, they took no action before finally pushing him out 3 weeks, 18 days later, only after the information that Flynn had lied about his conversations with the Russian ambassador became public, and it became clear that he had therefore opened himself up to being blackmailed. Before Flynn was fired, however, Sally Yates herself was fired by Donald Trump after she announced that she was unable to defend the administration's Muslim travel ban that had barred refugees from Syria and immigrants from seven different Muslim majority nations, because she was unconvinced that the executive order that Trump had issued at the time was lawful or constitutional. Desi Doyen, didn't we have an historical moment known as the Nuremberg trials when we held Nazis accountable?
Yes, just following orders is not an excuse. Is not a justified excuse to use.
Not when it's an illegal order. And in this case, several courts have found since, several federal courts have agreed essentially with Yates's concerns about the legality and constitutionality.
Yes, she was confirmed by those courts. They agreed with her.
Essentially, they did. And they had barred those travel bans. Two of them now have been blocked by the courts, at least for the moment. In any event, during today's Senate hearings, which are still ongoing as we go to air right now, at least one thing was made clear. David Corn of Mother Jones noted that the White House did not act when told that their national security advisor was compromised by Russia, or at least potentially compromised by the Russians. Now, that's aside from whatever you think about what Russia did or didn't do in the election, or at least it should be. Flynn had a conversation with a Russian diplomat that he did not tell the truth about, at least according to the White House account of what happened. Specifically, he is said to have lied to the vice president, who then went out and cited that misleading information to the public. Again, that made Flynn open to compromise or blackmail, and Yates warned the White House about it, but the White House took no action. Instead, they fired her, and then finally, some 3 weeks later, they fired Flynn after his lie became public, and they finally released him as National Security Advisor, the guy who is responsible for overseeing all of the nation's intelligence and putting it together for the President of the United States. So once again, I'm pointing this out, no matter what you feel about what happened in last year's elections, what the Russians did or didn't do, what effect they had, we know that the National Security Advisor, the guy with probably the top clearance for intelligence, certainly in the White House, had exposed himself to blackmail. And as Sally Yates made clear today, the Russians knew about this information as well. Here's a minute or two from her testimony.
Would you tell the White House?
Okay. So I told them again that there were a number of press accounts of statements that had been made by the vice president and other high-ranking White House officials about General Flynn's conduct that we knew to be untrue. And we told them how we knew that this, how we had this information, how we had acquired it, and how we knew that it was untrue. And we walked the White House counsel, who also had an associate there with him, through General Flynn's underlying conduct, the contents of which I obviously cannot go through with you today because it's classified. We then walked through with Mr. McGahn essentially why we were telling them about this. The underlying conduct that General Flynn had engaged in was problematic in and of itself. Secondly, we told him we felt like the vice president and others were entitled to know that the information that they were conveying to the American people wasn't true. And we wanted to make it really clear right out of the gate that we were not accusing Vice President Pence of knowingly providing false information to the American people. And the third reason is because we were concerned that the American people had been misled about the underlying conduct and what General Flynn had done. And additionally, that we weren't the only ones that knew all of this, that the Russians also knew about what General Flynn had done, and the Russians also knew that General Flynn had misled the vice president and others, and that this was a problem because not only did we believe that the Russians knew this, but that they likely had proof of this information. And that created a compromise situation, a situation where the national security advisor essentially could be blackmailed by the Russians. Finally, we told them that we were giving them all of this information so that they could take action, the action that they deemed appropriate.
And the action they deemed appropriate was to do nothing, apparently, for 18 days until the information essentially leaked out about what happened, and they were forced to let Michael Flynn go. That was Sally Yates, the former acting attorney general, giving testimony on Monday in the U.S. Senate Intelligence, a subcommittee with the U.S. Senate Intelligence Committee. The Republicans on that committee were far more concerned, it seemed, about the leaks from the case than about the underlying concerns that the White House's top intelligence official had opened himself up to blackmail, that the White House had been informed about it but had apparently done nothing about it until publicly called out on it because of that leak from someone. We still don't know who's responsible for that leak. So that testimony, as I say, is ongoing still as we go to air today. I know everyone else is talking about it. So we'll let others cover that today. As they zig, we will zag, so to speak, once again, since those who might oppose this administration are eventually going to have to take action at the voting booth. As you're watching this testimony, whatever you may think about it, you may want to take action at the voting booth one way or another. And Republicans are hard at work to keep that from happening, to keep you from being able to take that action, unfortunately. Here's one example late Friday in Iowa. Iowa voters will soon need to show identification at the polls under a new law signed by Republican Governor Terry Branstad on Friday. That measure overhauls Iowa's election laws through a series of changes that Republicans say are needed to ensure the integrity of the process. This is how Des Moines Register reported it. To ensure integrity of the process and to prevent fraud, but which Democrats and others argue will suppress votes by creating barriers for the poor, elderly, people with disabilities, and minorities. Who knows? Who knows who has it right? Republicans say one thing, Democrats say another, according to the Des Moines Register. This is, they quote the ACLU executive director saying that Branstad signed this outrageous voter suppression bill into law, and tens of thousands of Iowa eligible voters will now be harmed. And then they quote, of course, Governor Branstad and his new Republican Secretary of State, who has been pushing this legislation, as saying it's needed to prevent fraud. Way down at the bottom of the article, the Des Moines Register says the issue has frustrated Democrats who note that instances of voter impersonation are exceedingly rare. After the November 2017 election, Iowa's election officials said they were aware of only a handful of improperly cast ballots. But they don't really go into, the paper doesn't go into any other detail other than that. They do have a link to this handful of improperly cast ballots, and it's a report from AP. A report from AP that finds, this is from February of this year, finding that Iowa's top election officials, a top election official who is pushing for a voter ID requirement that could make it harder for some to vote, has only been informed of 10 votes that were potentially improper out of nearly 1.6 million that were counted statewide in the November election last year. This is Iowa Secretary of State Paul Pate. He learned of a handful of cases of alleged double votes, votes cast by ineligible felons on Election Day that were counted, a few of them, according to a summary of general election irregularities that was obtained by the AP under the Open Records Law. And going through those 10 instances, not one of them would be stopped by a photo ID restriction. They were, you know, instances of people double voting, not knowing that they weren't allowed to vote in two different locations, you know, two different states, or felons who had voted. For example, one guy had been a felon in another state where he was allowed to vote, and then he moved to Iowa, where they don't allow former felons to vote. Most of these were human error. The city's public defender in this one case in Storm Lake found no skullduggery at all, he said, with any of these. And in fact, a group representing Iowa's 99 county auditors, the people who actually run elections, they all opposed Pate's plan. And yet it was passed by the legislature last week. It was signed by the Republican governor.
And the Des Moines Register couldn't figure out a way to inform its own readers, hey, there's no evidence for this.
Nope, they couldn't. Here's one quote. There were no irregularities here. It worked exactly as it should. This was Fayette County Deputy Auditor Ruth Ann Kearney, who said a felon's provisional ballot was not counted after further review. You had some cases where there were some former felons who had registered to vote on Election Day, as you were allowed to do in Iowa, but they had to vote provisionally. And their votes were flagged and their votes were not counted. The election, the system worked as it should. Fraud is not a problem in Iowa. And yet they're making it harder for tens of thousands of people to vote now in Iowa. Tens of thousands of people who happen to lean Democratic. Who don't have a way to cast their vote or who don't have the type of ID that will now be required soon to vote in the state of Iowa. So that's just one example of people fighting like hell in this country to try to vote, and people and others fighting like hell to keep them from voting. And then there's the cases of people who actually do vote, wondering if their votes were counted and counted accurately. And that's what happened in Georgia, where a new study has found all new. And I thought we had found them all of the flaws in the Diebold touchscreen systems that are used in still used, shamefully used in Georgia. Well, a group down in Georgia of election integrity folks took a look at what happened in that primary election in Georgia's 6th congressional district in April and has found all new critical security flaws. That in advance of the runoff election for this U.S. House seat that's coming up in June. We will talk about that next on the broadcast. I'm Brad Friedman. Don't go away. Welcome back to the Bradcast. Brad Friedman from bradblog.com. Last month, we reported in some detail on the U.S. House special election in Georgia's 6th congressional district. That contest in a very Republican district near Atlanta is being regarded as a key bellwether for the 2018 elections, and a record amount of money is now flowing into both the first-time Democratic candidate John Ossoff and now his Republican opponent in the June 20 runoff election, former Georgia Secretary of State Karen Handel. The first round of voting last month, the primary, featured some 18 different candidates, including a split field of Republicans, with the Democrat John Ossoff reportedly receiving more than 48% of the vote. Had Ossoff received more than 50% of the vote, he would have won the seat outright and avoided the upcoming runoff in June. Instead, he'll be running against Karen Handel, who I believe she got about 18 or 19% of the vote, but she was the leading Republican candidate and the second place finisher, so she will run off against Ossoff in June. The vacant House seat they're battling over had belonged to Congressman Tom Price, who is now Donald Trump's Secretary of Health and Human Services. Price had won that seat handily once again last November. He had served in the post for about 10 years. He won handily by some 20 points last November in a district that has long been held by Republicans, including former House Speaker Newt Gingrich, dating all the way back to the 70s. But while Price won by 20 points, Trump barely eked out a win in that district last November. He won by just a little over 1 percentage point in the wealthy suburban district north of Atlanta. So Democrats see that seat as exceedingly vulnerable. Georgia votes at the polling place, however, on 100% unverifiable touchscreen voting systems. The state was one of the first in the nation to move to that type of a system back in 2002, and they are one of the last states now in the union to still force all voters at the polling place to use 100% unverifiable systems. It is strictly impossible, as I have pointed out many times on this show and at bradblog.com, strictly impossible to know that any vote ever cast on the Diebold touchscreen systems that are still used in Georgia, any of those votes, impossible to know if any of them has ever been recorded accurately as per a voter intent for any candidate or initiative on the ballot. Yet, Georgia keeps using them. And that became of even greater concern back in March of this year when a massive data breach was discovered in the voter database at Kennesaw State University. Its election, its Center for Elections is contracted to program all of Georgia's voting machines and electronic poll books. At the time, Republican Secretary of State there, Brian Kemp, said there was no need to worry about that hack at Kennesaw State University. But computer scientists and voting machine experts at verifiedvoting.org and elsewhere had asked the Secretary of State to allow voters to use paper ballots for the important 6th District special election. He refused. And then matters were made worse in April. On election night, in the primary on April 18, after two of the three counties in the district, in the 6th district, DeKalb and Cobb, had reported 100% of their precinct results. But the tabulation came to a complete halt for hours in Fulton County. That's the third county in the 6th district and home of Republican candidate and former Secretary of State Karen Handel. With Ossoff's reported percentage of the vote hovering just above 50%, which would have allowed him that outright win, the central computer tabulators in Fulton County suddenly reported an error and would not correctly process electronic memory cards from the touchscreen voting machines that were being uploaded from remote locations to it. Fulton's reporting precincts were stuck at 16% for several hours. Remember, the other two had come in 100%, but Fulton had only come in 16% before this problem was eventually found in Fulton County and corrected. It was described at the time that night on election night as a mysterious memory card error by officials. Once they discovered the faulty card in question, they said they were able to rerun the working cards, and Ossoff's total dropped from just above 50% down to 48% or so, eventually settling at 48.3%, leading to the June 20 runoff. So what really happened the night of that April 18th primary election that caused the computer tabulator error that stopped the tabulation of the 100% unverifiable touchscreen voting systems? Georgia Secretary of State Brian Kemp chalked the problem up to human error. Some supporters of the Democratic candidate John Ossoff, however, suspected foul play. So what really happened? Well, a new preliminary analysis of the root causes of the election night tabulation failures in Fulton County was released last week, this new analysis, from VoterGA.org, which is a nonpartisan election integrity watchdog group, and they cite a number of critical security flaws that were discovered in the central tabulation system as they did their analysis. That central tabulation system is a computer. Essentially, it's known as the Global Election Management System, or GEMS. And they discovered these flaws as a result of their investigation into the incident. GEMS is used as the central tabulator computer for elections all over the country, not just in Georgia with its touchscreen systems, but it's also used in other states, which use optically scanned paper ballots for tallying results. In those cases, the electronic memory cards from the optical scanners are uploaded to GEMS in the same way. The analysis, according to VoterGA, revealed two critical security flaws and two serious security flaws that span Georgia's Georgia's servers, Georgia's GEM servers in Fulton County and in all of its county, as well as its voting machines and electronic poll books. So how will those what are those critical security flaws, and how will they affect the June 20 runoff, which, according to the latest polling out of Georgia, is essentially now at a dead heat between the two runoff candidates? And for that matter, might this same flaw affect other elections around the country in 2018 and other upcoming special House elections and so forth? After all, hundreds, if not thousands, of counties around the nation also use that GEMS central tabulation computer system. Here to explain the report, the security flaws, and what we should or shouldn't be worried about is Garland Favorito. He's a career IT professional who, with his VoterGA.org co-founder Ricardo Davis, has some 70 years of total work experience in computer systems analysis, database administration, system integration, server administration, and multi-factor security. Favorito and Davis have also been involved in analysis and implementation of Georgia's voting machines for many, many years, going back even prior to the statewide implementation of Georgia's 100% unverifiable Diebold touchscreen systems back in 2002. Garland Favorito, welcome to the broadcast, sir.
Brad, thank you so much for having me on. That was the most amazingly accurate recap of everything that's gone on in Georgia and the 6th District that I've ever heard. Are you sure you don't live in Georgia?
Well, thank you, sir. I was going to ask you if I got anything right, if I missed anything hugely critical there, but I'm glad to hear that I didn't. No, I don't live in Georgia, although I'd love to, except for the humidity, but that's another question. listen, okay, at the heart of this, your analysis, your root causes report, in general, you find very serious, at least, well, several very serious critical flaws in the tabulation system, as I noted, that are used in Georgia and a whole bunch of other places. Now, your analysis concluded that the GEMS servers are vulnerable to fraud and critical error that can dramatically alter the results of an election. You stated that the GEMS databases at any county will accept invalid election data from a remote or local source and inject the invalid data into live election results for totaling and publishing. How did you come to find that, and what actually happened on that you have found on the night of the April 18 election?
Well, that's right, Brad. So that's exactly the situation that we have here in Georgia. So the way this started was that the Fulton County election, probably a poll worker, had accidentally put a memory card from one election that they were conducting on April 18th into the tabulation upload facility for the 6th District election. And that raised several questions for us. Was to why, first of all, would they be conducting redundant elections on election night? But more importantly, as you said, Brad, the system accepted the invalid memory cards both at the point of upload, which was done with an AccuVote TSX machine, mm-hmm. and at the point of the GEMS database server, which accepted the results and included them right into the live election results for the 6th District.
And right. let me try to make sure I understand what you're saying, because they had a separate election. There was another special election in a couple of these areas somewhere in Fulton County. And instead of having the races on the same ballot, because of some scheduling issues, they actually ran several different elections, one for the special House race and another for a local district, a city council or something, as I recall.
And yeah, that's exactly right, Brad, and that's unprecedented in Georgia history. We're running three separate databases and elections on the same night. So what that means, if you, as a voter, and I'm right here in the 6th District in mm-hmm. Roswell in the middle of this whole controversy, but I had to go in and vote for the Roswell City Council race on one memory card. Mm-hmm. I had to check in twice, once for each race, sign two different sets of paper, go and vote, take one memory card and vote on one set of machines for the Roswell runoff, then go back, give that card in, and get another card and go and vote on a different set of machines for the 6th District Congressional race. That happened in both Roswell and Johns Creek.
So instead of uploading, instead of after the election, taking the memory card out of each voting machine and just uploading the results for all of the races, instead, election officials in Roswell, in this case, had to take the cards out, upload it to the 6th District race, and then take the cards out from the other machines and upload those for the other race, the city council race, as a separate process.
Yeah, that's exactly right, Brad. And they did that by taking those cards to a collection site. Fulton is the largest and most populous county in Georgia. It stretches from the north side of Atlanta to the south. And there are three collection sites. So what they do is to take these cards, all the precinct workers, to their designated collection site. And they upload them exactly as you described into the central warehouse gym server for Fulton County.
But they... took a card from one of the other races and uploaded it accidentally, I presume, to the sixth district election, and the machine that they were uploading from allowed that to happen, and then the central tabulator at the county warehouse accepted those invalid results from a totally different election into the sixth district election.
That's exactly right, Brad. And the way they have to do that is they can only have one election at a time because, as you know, most anybody anywhere who's conducting elections only has one election on election night. And as you said, all of the races are on the same ballot. In this case, they were not. And that is exactly what happened. The card from one election accidentally got loaded into the card for the results for the 6th district election.
And there was nothing built into the software, either in the machine that was doing the uploading or in the central GEMS tabulator that was receiving those results. There was nothing in either of those systems that said, hey, wait a minute, this is for an election this is for a different election. This is not for the 6th district election. These are results for a totally different election. Nothing prevented that from happening. The computer system did not set off bells and whistles.
That's exactly right, Brad. So it's quite amazing, and that's why we were so amazed with this. It was a legitimate human error, but as you said, the system should have caught that, and being an IT professional for literally 30 or 40 years, as well as my co-founder, Ricardo, we found that to be almost amazing. Mm. And we would consider those to be absolutely critical software flaws, that there was no validation either on the upload at the collection site on the way through the AccuVote TSX, or no adequacy criteria that was implemented at the database server. So basically, that scenario could play itself out again almost any time.
Now, does that mean, if I'm understanding this, Garland Favorito, that someone could upload an inappropriate memory card accidentally, as you suggest happened in this case, or that a bad guy, if he wanted to, he or she wanted to, could actually figure out where to upload a memory card, put a bad memory card in there, put their memory card that had whatever results they wanted, and upload it into the central server, and that would not be discovered by the software?
Exactly, Brad, and that's the real concern, that a bad guy could, legitimately change the results of an election through fraud.
Which is kind of amazing to me that they're still using these machines. I mean, I'm amazed anyway that they're still using these unverifiable machines, but that we're still finding these kind of critical security flaws. And I should say, I've spoken with some computer scientists and voting machines experts who have looked at your report, and they found your explanation of what happened here to be plausible. But Georgia Secretary of State Brian Kemp, his conclusion was that the Fulton County, what happened in Fulton County, was the fault of officials there. It was not the fault of the tabulation system. He says he's opened his own investigation, but that the probe would be limited to the training of election officials. He said, "This is user error, not an equipment malfunction, and Fulton County officials are ultimately responsible for the error. We have opened a formal investigation, and we will continue to gather the facts to find out exactly why this failure in training and basic procedure occurred." In other words, he was saying, there is nothing wrong with our voting system. This is just election officials who screwed up. Garland, your response to Secretary Kemp's response.
So that's classic, and I think that's one of the most important things to look at, and how you see public officials can cover up certain things. So in this case, Brian Kemp reached a conclusion before he had opened an investigation. He then opened an investigation to support his conclusion, but more importantly, he set the scope of the investigation so that it would never investigate the critical things that actually occurred on election night. And this is a classic way that politicians, and particularly people who are responsible, such as attorney generals, for investigating these types of things, this is a classic way that they cover up their tracks, by making a conclusion, setting an investigation, and making the scope never investigate what actually occurred.
Has the Secretary of State's office responded yet to your preliminary analysis? I know you just released it late last week. Have you heard anything back from the Secretary's office?
Not yet. We're still waiting for them to respond to the offer by 20 computer experts to help move Georgia to verify voting. He has yet to respond to that, and of course they have not responded to our study. And as I found out the other day, that through an open records request, they didn't actually even assign anybody to the to investigate it until after our report was complete.
Even though the election was held back in mid-April, and he said he would be investigating, nobody actually took the step to investigate it in the Secretary's office?
Not until May the 2nd. When our report was completed on May the 1st and May the 2nd, we had finished ours, and they had yet to assign an investigator until then.
Wow. Garland Favorito from VoterGA.org. Sit tight. I need to take a quick break here. And when I come back, I want to ask you a bunch of stuff. Amongst them, your report says no evidence of fraud was actually found in this election. But does that mean there was no fraud? I'll ask Garland about that and much more straight ahead on the broadcast. I'm Brad Friedman. Don't go away.
Georgia.
Welcome back to the broadcast. Brad Friedman from bradblog.com. I'm speaking with Garland Favorito, co-founder with Ricardo Davis of VoterGA.org, about their report concerning the April 18th primary election for the U.S. House election, the special election that was run there, to fill the seat of Congressman Tom Price, who's now with the Trump administration, and questions about the counting that took place that night, concerns about the counting that took place that night from Georgia's 100% unverifiable touchscreen systems, where the GEMS tabulator, the central tabulator, failed in one of the counties at a crucial moment on April 18. Leading to a runoff election coming up now in June 20. And will we see a lot of the same problems again? Will we have the same concerns about whether the tally will be accurate? Garland, the VoterGA preliminary analysis says that it did not find evidence of fraud in the April 18 elections, but it explains how fraud could be carried out undetectably. Are you certain that there was no fraud in that April 18 election? I know you're saying you didn't find any. Does that mean there was none?
Well, it's only, well, you're right. It was a preliminary analysis. We're looking, continuing to look at that. But it appears that this was a human error, as near as we can tell. And Ossoff did do remarkably better than what he was expected to do. Most of the results were expecting about 35-40%.
Mm-hmm.
He came in at 48, so in a heavy, heavy Republican district. So it appears that the results, once this human error was explained by the elections director, it seems to be legitimate, and I've also been able to corroborate that with their top technical guy on the server, and they both seem to be presenting an honest view of the facts.
Now, just to be clear, because I often refer to these types of voting systems as 100% unverifiable touchscreen systems. Mm-hmm. To be clear, this my coverage of elections is essentially nonpartisan, and I know your work at voterga.org is also nonpartisan. The Democrat here, who you say ended up doing better than expected, just to make my Republicans friends happy here, for all we know, the Democrat could have, or somebody who was in favor of the Democrat could have, been committing fraud in this election on his behalf. Isn't the point here? Am I accurate when I say these are unverifiable voting systems, and that really, ultimately, we don't know if the results are accurate?
Brad, absolutely. You're 100% plus accurate. They are unverifiable. There is no way to detect whether or not fraud really occurred. We just looked at it from the perspective of what information we have to work with. But as you pointed out, and have pointed out for years, as we both have, that we do not have verifiable elections in Georgia. And this is another example. When you have a controversy, you have no ballot of record to go back to prove that the results were in fact accurate. There is no way to audit the vote in Georgia.
I assume that Karen Handel, as the former Secretary of State there and the Republican candidate in the 6th District runoff coming up, I'll assume that she understands and knows the vulnerabilities of these particular voting systems and the GEMS tabulator very well. Does the Democratic Ossoff campaign understand these concerns? Is voter GA in touch with the campaigns themselves about these concerns?
We're not directly involved in either campaign, or we put our information out publicly where both of the campaigns can pick it up. But we are not in touch with either campaign. And to your point, Brad, as you said, I think that Karen Handel, as a former Secretary of State, is very aware of this. She didn't even ask for a runoff, for a recount.
Mm-hmm.
When she lost a close governor's race in the Republican primary. So she's aware. I do not think that the Ossoff campaign or some of the Democrats in general, I don't think they're aware of the, at least in the establishment, are aware of the magnitude of the problem. Now, the grassroots people on both sides are. They fully understand the issue, both in the Republicans and the Democrats. But it's the establishment that doesn't either want to get it or either they just don't get it.
I guess it goes without saying at this point that the same systems are now going to be used in the June 20th election. You mentioned that Kemp did not respond to the 20 or so computer scientists from Verified Voting and elsewhere who had asked him prior to the primary to allow voters to vote on paper. So we're going to use these same 100% unverifiable systems on June 20th. Are you confident that the same problems that they had in April and this vulnerability that now you've shown, are you confident that problem won't occur on June 20th at this point?
Well, that's a two-part question. The problem won't occur again because they're not conducting redundant elections on the same day. and
right.
June 20th. However, the security flaw is still there. And the bigger concern is that this security flaw that's known can be exploited at any of one of the three counties,
mm-hmm.
and it could, in fact, change the results on election night.
On election night on June 20, I think there's just one, well, you'll correct me if I'm wrong, but in the runoff, will there just be one contest on the ballot for the 6th District? Are these other elections ongoing, or is that it, just the one U.S. House race?
To my knowledge, it will be a standalone race on June 20th. There were a couple of other runoffs. They're going to be conducted earlier.
Mm-hmm.
Cobb, for example, has a runoff in May based on their Senate district race that went to runoff on April 18th. But as to my knowledge, there is no other election being held in either one of the three counties on June the 20th.
And so, with just one race on the ballot, and we know there are paper ballots that do exist in Georgia, correct me if I'm wrong, but I think that there are some absentee mail-in ballots, so we know they exist. In this case, if voters were to use paper at the polls, you've got one race that, to my mind, I mean, obviously they can be optically scanned as well, because Georgia has those facilities for those mail-in ballots, but you got one race. Couldn't we just put the ballots in two separate piles, one for Ossoff and one for Handel, and count this thing by
Brad,
hand?
And that's the irony of this whole thing. You could actually conduct this race or on election night and report the results by paper, by hand, faster than you could lugging all of those expensive, unverifiable machines to all the different precincts, and then going through the same upload process again just for this one race. It would be faster and cheaper to do it, as you described, by paper ballot. So that's the irony of the whole situation.
It sure is. And it's maddening. It's a maddening irony, frankly, Garland. Would you recommend that voters, I don't know how the absentee voting process, the mail-in absentee voting process works in Georgia, but would you recommend that voters vote by absentee mail-in instead of these touchscreen voting machines?
Yes, absolutely, Brad. As you said, we do have optical scanners, and all of the counties have enough optical scanner. Since this is only one race, they could put an optical scanner in every precinct in the 6th district. That would not be a problem. We do have, we could scan those ballots up right there without any problem whatsoever. So we do recommend mail-in ballots because you do have an official ballot of record, and you can make a copy of it before you mail it back in. And we are going to be publishing procedures in the next few days as to exactly how to get a mail-in ballot and return that through the normal absentee ballot functions that are already set up in Georgia.
Does Georgia allow for no excuse absentee? In other words, anyone can request a paper absentee ballot?
That's exactly right, Brad. Yes, we do.
Okay, well, that's good news. So we would recommend anyone in the 6th District to ask for it. I know you said you'll come out with procedures that people can check at voterga.org, but can they go to their county headquarters and request one? Do they have to mail in a request? How does that work?
Yes, that's exactly right, Brad. You will mail in a request, and they will... actually, you can fax it in. You don't even have to mail it in. You can download the request from the Secretary of State's website, and they have a request form for every county. I think the form is the same. And they'll give you the fax number of where to fax that request in, so you don't have to mail it in. You can fax it in, and then you'll get the ballot, and you can vote at home by mail and just return that ballot.
And you can also, I know out here in California, you can bring those paper ballots into the precinct on election day. Is that allowable? I have more confidence bringing it in to the precinct in person myself than I do dropping it in a mailbox. Is that allowable in Georgia?
Brad, that is a great question. I believe it is. We normally return it ahead of time, which, as you are alluding to, there could be a security risk there. I'm going to have to double-check, but I believe that you can return it to the precinct, but I'd have to check to make sure.
Okay, so, and we'll stay in touch with you, Garland, as we get closer. We still have, a month or two before this runoff actually takes place. And in that regard, we got some good news late last week from a federal court. Brad Blog's legal analyst Ernie Canning wrote a little bit about it on Friday at bradblog.com. A federal judge has ordered Georgia to reopen voter registration for the runoff election. Essentially, if I understand this correctly, Secretary of State Brian Kemp was arguing that if you hadn't registered prior to the primary race in April 18, then you would not be allowed to register and vote before the June 20 runoff. In other words, you'd have to be registered 3 months in advance. His argument was the June 20th runoff was part of the same election. Therefore, he didn't have to allow people to continue registering. Do I understand that correctly? Because the federal court has now lifted that and said, yes, people can register up till, 30 days prior to the June 20 election.
Yeah, that's exactly right, Brad, but it's even worse than what you thought because it's actually been shut down since March 21st when the original race was conducted. There was a runoff, you remember, in Roswell on April 18th.
Right.
So the registration has actually been closed since March the 21st.
But now that has been opened due to the federal law has said, no, you can't keep people from registering up till 30 days prior to the election?
That's exactly right, Brad. So you've got up to 30 days from June the 20th. So that would put us somewhere around May the 21st, I believe. You can register up and you have a couple more weeks to register. If you haven't registered already.
One last question, Garland Favorito, and your information is so helpful, and your report was just so well written and so clear and so smart. It's greatly appreciated. At the end of that report, you have an appendix, a history of Georgia vote counting discrepancies, and you cite in Cobb County, which is one of the three counties in this sixth district, back in 2005. This is a local sales tax, essentially, a referendum that was on the ballot. This appeared to be headed for defeat back in 2005. But election problems back then in 2005 halted the counting, not unlike what we saw in April in the special House race. And when the errors had been addressed, the tax was declared to have been passed by 114 votes. Even though there were 285 blank voted ballots and the tax was the only contest on the ballot, does that mean that people went to this special election, voted in an election that had one thing on the ballot, but voted for not in favor or against the sales tax?
That's what Kennesaw State tried to tell us when we asked, how could that have possibly happened? Why would voters take the time to drive to the polls, stand in line, because it was a pretty hot issue, and then go in, get their memory card, and go up into the voting booth, put their card in, and then decide not to cast their ballot after they got in there? That's just hard to believe. In fact, it's just unbelievable.
It is somewhat impossible to believe, but it underscores the problem that I continue to point out, and I know you do as well at VoterGA.org, of these 100% unverifiable voting systems. We will never know if these people in Georgia, strange people perhaps, would go and not vote for anybody. I mean, not vote for, you know, the one thing on the election that they lined up to vote for, but we can't know because it's an unverifiable system.
Yeah, and Brad, just to add one thing to that, that SPLOST tax assessed approximately over $1 billion of taxes against the citizens of Cobb County as a result of those blank-voted ballots, those mysterious ballots.
Thank you for pointing that out, because I try to point out how important, you know, elections are, and I think people get caught up in the partisan nature of elections. You know, when their candidate wins, the election system were great. When theirs loses, they're concerned it's because of problems in the election system. But these things, there is a lot of money on the line here, even in a nonpartisan tax election like you refer to here, billions of dollars. And so anyone who thinks, oh, it wouldn't be worth it to try to game the system, it's going to be worth it to somebody, because there are billions of dollars on the line for even these, you know, a small local special sales tax election.
Exactly, Brad. And that same scenario repeated itself again in 2011 with different numbers, almost identically, in the same county.
And yet, Georgia... And yet she persists. Georgia continues to use these voting machines, and you and I continue to drive everyone crazy about it. And people are surprised when this happens. Not you. I know you've been covering it for many years now. Thank you for that, Garland. Thank you for continuing to stay on this, and please stay in touch with us. Hopefully, we'll talk to you again before we get to the June 20 election and thereafter, if everything goes south, I suspect.
And Brad, thank you for all that you're doing, because it's your reporting that keeps the pressure on the officials in the state of Georgia and every other state around the country. So thank you so much. I love what you're doing, and it's been an honor to be on your show.
You're very kind to say so. Garland Favorito, thank you, sir. Co-founder of VoterGA.org. You can find their preliminary analysis of these serious, critical security flaws at that site. I'll also link to them from bradblog.com. And we will be talking to you soon, Garland. Thank you so much.
Okay. Thank you, Brad.
You bet. Okay, running very late, so I'm getting out. My thanks to our producer. Unbelievable. Our producer, Desi Doyen, my guest, Garland Favorito of VoterGA.org, and to you for spending a portion of your day or night with us. If you missed any portion of today's program or any other, please download it at bradblog.com for free. My great thanks to those of you who help keep us going by stopping by bradblog.com/donate. You can drop me email if you like. I'm bradcast@bradblog.com. And you can find, follow, and please share us far and wide on the Facebooks and the Twitters at The Brad Blog. All right, that's it. Until we meet again, I'm Brad Friedman. Good luck, world.